is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict. I welcome Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. I mentioned that Gregory's information and more updates are available on the website strategicstudies.org. It's a subscription site, and you're welcome to learn more, including updates, and that's what this is. Gregory, we have news from Crimea that's incomplete, fog of war, but we know that there was an attack of some nature on the Saki Air Base in these last days, destroying more than a few warplanes in their revetments, destroying them in a way that the Ukrainian authorities in Kyiv were making witticisms about a drop cigarette. Now we have news, again incomplete, of an explosion, photographs of it, on Crimea at what was said to be an ammo depot, and the explosion has discomfited the Russian forces so much the trains have stopped. This is Crimea. This is the Russian base for the invasion of southern Ukraine. And what this appears to be is, it's been given to me, a drone attack, a missile attack, or a sabotage. Certainly, the second attack against the ammo depot is said to use the word sabotage in the explanation from Kyiv. They didn't use that in the Saki Air Base. Now, the question is asked, is this the counteroffensive that's been much ballyhooed these last weeks, not led by armor brigades, but led by saboteurs? Good evening to you, Gregory.
Good evening, John. Well, firstly, you can't believe anything coming out of Kyiv or Washington, or for that matter, London, or for that matter, Moscow, about what's really going on. You can only look at the hard evidence and draw conclusions. The Ukrainian forces are engaged in a re-escalation and trying to carry the conflict to the Russians. But essentially, the conflict is at a stalemate. What we're seeing is the ability of both sides to project increasingly longer range and more accurate artillery strikes, whether it's tube artillery or rocket artillery, plus some standoff air munitions delivered outside the actual combat zone, so that these can achieve great effects. Now, the question is going to be, how far can the Ukrainian artillery strike into Russian-held territory, and particularly in the Ukraine, and into Russia proper? We have seen activities of the Ukrainian armed forces up into Russia. In other words, Ukraine has invaded parts of Russia with some of its military acts, and it certainly carried the war back into Ukraine. Now, the attack, firstly, about a week ago on the 2nd Guards Naval Aviation Air Base at Novofedorovka, which is about, I guess, at the extreme end of Ukrainian artillery range, that did some damage. Now, it was probably artillery, or it could have been delivered from UCAVs, unmanned combat aerial vehicles, such as the Turkish-built Bayraktar TB2 aircraft firing a Hellfire type of missile. Those could have delivered the kind of results against the aircraft based at the Novofedorivka naval air station. So that's possible, and they certainly will escalate that. And certainly the protection which the Russians gave to their aircraft at that base, and the protection they gave to the ammunition base, are no longer adequate to defend against either long-range artillery or Hellfire-type strikes from unmanned combat aerial vehicles. One thing you can say is that the damage at that airbase would have been far more severe had the aircraft not been in the basic revetments, in other words, surrounded on three sides by built-up earthworks. But they still need more than that if they're going to be safe into the future. And by the way, Russia inflicts the same kind of damage on Crimean targets from standoff artillery of various types.
The concern now is, going forward, what comes next? If this is a counter, if this is the long expected Ukrainian counteroffensive, what it looks like is, as you say, long range strikes against bridgeheads, against headquarters, more and more precise strikes. We also had news that HARM missiles are being deployed into the hands of the Ukrainian forces, and HARM missiles are anti-radar sites. In other words, the capability of blinding Russian air defense. I'm also told HARM can be fired from the ground, so it doesn't need an aircraft to launch it. However, what I'm talking about is the mechanics of war as opposed to the strategy of the present conflict. And I want to introduce a measure by John Bolton, former National Security Advisor, published in the London Telegraph for your comment. Mr. Bolton, Ambassador Bolton believes that the most likely future is that the war will grind on, both sides attriting each other, and sabotage now is a new element that the Russians must deal with. Their security forces clearly need to be enhanced. However, at the same time, there are 10 million or more Ukrainians who have fled Ukraine. The refugee outflow is overwhelming the neighboring countries. And the EU has profound problems about sustaining its own population through these next months, given the cutoff and the leverage that the Russian energy has. So John Bolton says the most likely outcome is more of the same, an unending conflict of death and threat and shortages and what you'd have to say, kvetching, whining from Europe about the people who are dragging us into this conflict. However, there is one other possibility that John introduced, which is that Putin, as a strategist, declares a ceasefire, an armistice, a frozen front line, roughly along the Dnieper River Valley, because the Russian forces are challenged to cross the Dnieper with the ability of the Ukrainians to strike at bridges, to declare a frozen conflict, to ask for arbitration or a peace table, and to start the negotiation knowing that the Ukrainian state is out of time, out of money, with the population deracinated and without ability to generate any cash because its ports are cut off by floating mines and its manpower has been turned into an army. That would give Putin and Moscow time to replenish and restore and win more plaudits from those who haven't sanctioned Russia. At the same time, demand that the sanctions be lifted. And at this point, I can't say whether NATO will or will not lift sanctions. However, what do you make of the idea that Putin knows that time is on his side, calling a ceasefire and letting what is left of Ukraine wither?
I don't think that Putin will declare a ceasefire or ask for a ceasefire in the very near future, because that will look as though he is in a position of weakness, and he is not in a position of weakness. Essentially, the war has been decided, and it's only this continual artillery dueling, which has been going on and will continue to go on for some time, because that's all either side can afford to do. What we see is we're a position where infantry forces are really hard pressed to make any advances to secure objectives which have been bombarded. So all both sides are doing is shelling each other with, and they're doing this for political effect rather than for military and strategic effect. So the overarching goal of these attacks, such as the ones on the airbase and the ammunition depot, such as the ones against Russia inside Russian borders, these are all about showing that Ukraine still has some resources, but it doesn't get Ukraine any closer toward achieving peace on its terms either. And by the way, neither does the Russian situation allow it to advance too far either. But the Russians have achieved most of their geographic objectives, and at some stage they'll need to start talking about an agreed ceasefire line, probably not a peace line, not a new border, because neither side will agree to that until they get what they want. But it will be something which would provide a degree of settlement, and maybe will allow both sides to reduce their artillery duels. In the meantime, Ukraine has essentially lost and will lose even further in the coming winter. Ukraine has been quite remarkable in that it's been able to continue a lot of its economic activity, not as much as it would under normal circumstances, obviously, but it's now economically moving back to a degree of normalcy. But President Zelensky really doesn't want to admit that. He wants to say, no, we're under siege and the world owes us our survival, and you've got to let us escalate the war. And most of the European supporters of Ukraine are reluctant to do that because they are running into major crises themselves with energy, with water problems in this particularly bad summer. So they don't want to escalate the support. The only one who wants to escalate support is President Biden. So the thought is that Zelensky is prepared to fight to the last U.S. dollar, and President Biden is prepared to fight to the last Ukrainian citizen, well, at least until the midterm elections come up in November this year in the United States.
And then the concern for this Moscow at this point is the clock. They know the clock is on its Moscow knows the clock is on its side. What about the sanctions? We're told various stories about the sanctions being effective or ineffective. Certainly, it's cut Russia off from technology needed to maintain civilization as we understand it. I note that the report last week was that Russia was cannibalizing aircraft in order to keep what they have of the fleet flying. So do you believe that Russia can tolerate this shortage of parts and technology indefinitely?
Absolutely, and are far better equipped to do so than the Soviet Union was during the Cold War. Of course, they have to cannibalize their parts for Boeing and Airbus aircraft because those aren't being sold into Russia anymore because of the sanctions. So if they want to keep those aircraft flying, they're going to have to cannibalize, and they're going to have to come up with a new system of should we say, registering them within Russia in a way which guarantees their continued airworthiness. But what this war is doing and what the sanctions are doing, as they do to all countries which are under sanction, is that it reinforces local initiatives to replace imported components with domestically produced components. And yes, Russia is has used up huge amounts of its war reserves to fight in Ukraine, but the United States has done so as well. The United States has sacrificed massive amounts of its reserves of ammunition and some systems like Stinger, surface-to-air missiles and such, which cannot be replaced. So the United States' ability to wage war or enforce deterrence around the rest of the world has diminished dramatically. And in Germany, for example, which only had about 3 days of war fighting stocks of spares, ammunition, and material, that's in even worse shape. So Russia is actually doing pretty well. Its domestic aerospace and defense industries are such that they will increasingly not only replace their war losses, but will also allow them to develop new countermeasures and the like to improve the quality of their systems. And they will start to turn this also into the commercial sector to provide consumer goods. And bear in mind that they can also get ready access to consumer goods from the People's Republic of China, which is now taking increasing amounts of Russian energy and agricultural output.
I'm speaking with Gregory Copley on strategy in Ukraine conflict. This is the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. And the website is strategicstudies.org. When we come back, Taiwan. I'm John Bachman.